Guys, for 2 years now, I've been telling you about Stitcher Smart Radio. It's an app that you can get for your phone or your pad, and you can listen to over 5,000 podcasts, news shows. You can listen to CNN. You can listen to the Alec Baldwin Show. You can listen to Fresh Air. You can listen to Nerdist. You can listen to the Jeff Garland Show. You can listen to this podcast, How Did I Get Here? Without losing, like directly from your phone or your pad, without losing any memory, without having to download stuff, just listening to it, streaming over 5,000 shows. Go to your app store, Stitcher Smart Radio, smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host, welcome to the show. I hope you had a great Christmas. I did. I will tell you about it in just a minute. First, let me tell you who is on the show today. I have James Mason and Jason Close from the band The Roosevelts. They're here today. They just put out an EP produced by Dwight Baker. The EP is called Cold Sheets. And I didn't know these guys before they came in here, but they came in. Turns out they're great guys. We talked about, you know, they met in guitar circles. And kind of became this duo, and they, you know, this EP is doing great. They're opening for Bob Schneider on New Year's Eve at the Paramount here in Austin. If you're here, you can go see them. And also they're doing a thing on February 22nd, Rock the Boat, which they're going on some cruise that has musicians and stuff on it, which is great. And you can find out all about them and buy their album on iTunes, as well as find out everything you can about them at wearetheroosevelts.com. Before we get into my conversation with the Roosevelts, let me tell you about my Christmas. I hope, again, that all of you had a great Christmas. I had a great Christmas. I had a successful present-buying situation because I told you guys for the last month that I was going to be buying my Christmas presents at local record stores. I was going to be buying music for people, and I did. I did that, and I even bought music. I even bought CDs for babies, like the babies. Like, there's a baby that's probably, like, 3 or 4 months old, bought her a CD. Yeah, well, so only one baby was at the Christmas celebration opening the presents, and she just opened it. She didn't really care what it was. She's only two. Her name's Elena. Fantastic. I had a great time with my family. Always do. I got there on the 23rd. My cousins and I had a lot of cocktails and celebrated the Christmas, pre-Christmas night, and then Christmas Eve. Everyone came over, except for my cousin Christopher. Everyone else came over. So it was just a big family gathering. We had a great dinner. We exchanged presents. Everyone seemed to like their music. Hopefully they did. And my aunt got an iPod, when she got a new, you see someone that gets a new iPod, I get like excited, like, wow. It's like a blank slate. It's totally new. You can put anything you want on it and you have to fill it up. It was always so exciting to fill up a new iPod. So it might be time for a new iPod for me. I don't know. Anyway, so my Christmas was great. I got some great gifts. I got a neck massager. I got a crock pot, which I really wanted. I got a book of interviews from Terry Gross, which I read. So my Aunt Olga gave me all those, man. She's a fantastic gift giver. She also gave me a new decoration for my house, something that she made. And I enjoy her decorations. So, I did that. I stayed until Christmas morning. Came back, cleaned up the studio with really high hopes of writing songs. By the time I finished, I was tired, turned in. Yesterday, I got up, worked on music for a while, and then went and saw the new Scorsese movie, Wolf of Wall Street. Came back and worked on some more songs. Wolf of Wall Street, great movie. I think I'm going to go to the movies again today before I work on music. I'm just going to finish up this, put it out, maybe go see a movie, come back, make some music. Not a bad idea, huh? Sounds like a good plan. All right, so... New Year's Eve, these guys are playing in Austin. If you're in Austin, they are playing with Bob Schneider at the Paramount Theater. They are called the Roosevelts. My guests are James Mason and Jason Close. Oh, hey, if you're in Houston, come see Skyrocket New Year's Eve at the Rockefeller Hall. All right, just look that up. Like, Google Rockefeller Hall and find it. Skyrocket, whatever. Anyway, the Roosevelts are playing at the Paramount Theater. I do not know James and Jason, but for some reason, I thought I knew James. And anyway, they're working with my friend Christina Shipley, who was nice enough to put me in contact with them and set up this interview. So thank you, Christina, for doing that. And thank you to James and Jason for coming by a couple weeks ago. And we had a great conversation. We had a lot of laughs. So their EP is great. Cold Sheets, told you. I listened to it on the way to Houston. It's fantastic. So enjoy my conversation with James and Jason from the Roosevelts. Let's get down. Na 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 na. Everybody knows, and that's just how the story goes. It's written in rhyme and prose, and all you gotta do is read between the lines sometimes. The message is undefined, the meanings are intertwined. Love is such a mystery, but don't let it get you down. What goes around comes around, and everybody knows how this story goes. Love can break you and make you broke, make you feel like your life's a joke. And everybody knows how this story goes. Love can mend you.
I was really hungover one day and I watched season one in a day.
The whole. Were you just I like didn't stop so watching depressed? It. Or did you feel great about life when you were done?
It was pretty interesting, I will say, as far as a character study, because they weren't famous when they did it.
Yeah.
So they were just really idiots.
Yeah.
Living. Yeah. And MTV came to them, they're like, hey, you can live in this house.
And I'll pay you $200. Have fun this summer.
Yeah, and you know, you'll be able to just get as wasted as you want and, you know, fuck as many dudes as you want and chicks, and it's just like a free-for-all. You'll be on the
okay.
beach. And they're like, yeah. And, like, there's
people that literally are, like, that entitled in life that walk around with that kind of attitude.
Yeah. A lot.
And it was almost like it was almost like a skit. Yeah. It was almost like a Saturday Night Live skit on, yeah, like, today's kids.
Unreal. Come on.
Kids today. These guys are... Which one are you... Jason, right?
James.
Sorry. James, yeah. Jason. Which one of you guys is from Houston?
I'm the one from Houston.
Do I know you from Houston?
It's possible. Is that where you're from?
Well, I've done a lot of stuff there, and I lived there.
I grew up on the southeast side of town.
Nope. Did you work in clubs or anything there? Did you play there?
No, I really didn't play much in Houston. I mean...
A lot closer to that mic, sorry.
A few open mic nights at Monkey Duck, but in high school and when I would come home during college time. But
okay, where'd you go to high school?
Clear Lake.
Okay.
Southeast side of town.
All right. Yeah, I got you.
Thank yeah, you. Is that better?
It's, yeah.
Do I have that nice, sexy tone?
Yeah, it's totally sexy. And you're from...
From Alabama.
You're from Alabama, Jason.
Born in San Antonio. Grew up in Birmingham mostly.
Yeah.
Basically fourth grade on. Grew up there. Went to Auburn.
Nice.
And then, yeah, it's a blast.
What did you major in there? Were you going to be a musician the whole time, or did you
go
there?
No, I was 2 years biomedical science, pre-med. And then about 2 years in, I realized that I was kind of sick of organic chemistry and didn't want to take that route anymore. And so I switched to finance. Which allowed a lot more time to focus on music. Once I switched, I found that to be pretty easy.
Yeah, compared to science.
Yeah. So that's really when I started picking up music again through college and playing around with a bunch of buddies around town was like sophomore, junior year.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And when did you learn guitar? That's when you did?
No, I got my first guitar for Christmas when I was in sixth grade.
Okay.
I took piano for 6 years prior to that. Hated practicing, loved playing. I just hated practicing.
Yeah.
And so everybody in sixth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade was playing guitar.
Right.
You know, I'm a rock star. I play guitar. I was like, oh, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
My dad played guitar, and so he was like, well, you know, you're going to regret quitting piano, but if that's what you want to do, we'll try guitar. So they tried to talk me out of it for a while, and I wasn't having it. So he taught me the basic chords on the guitar. He was a huge James Taylor fan, can still play almost all of his songs. and really good guitar player, and he taught me the basics, and then I kind of ran with it from there, discovered the whole world of online tabs and buying, you know, song books and just going through those, and kind of took off from there.
Yeah. What were you interested in learning? Not just like James Taylor, but what else?
What really opened the door for me, as far as I had always played an acoustic guitar, wanted an electric, and didn't get one until years later. But the Live at Luther College CD, Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds, just two guys on acoustic guitars, just doing some crazy things.
What's the deal with that Tim Reynolds? Who was that guy? Was that like just his buddy, and he was like, "Oh, we're gonna go make an album"?
Yeah,
like
I don't
know enough about his stuff to know.
Tim
what's
had
going
done
on.
Some solo stuff, and then he met Dave along the way, and they did some stuff together. He was actually on, I think he played on Crush. He played on a couple tracks on the Crash album. Mm-hmm. So he was, I don't know if he was a studio musician prior, but he and Dave had done some collaborations, and he played on Dave's latest record, the entire thing. But they did just a solo acoustic show, and it just blew my mind, the, you know, playing cage notes
and
variations of notes and just the lead parts on an acoustic. I was like, what? So, it was very different from the, I guess, from all the other stuff I'd kind of grown up listening to, but that kind of opened it for me, as far as what's possible on acoustic guitar. So I would just spend literally hours every night just learning his stuff note by note and playing, trying to do what they did.
Yeah.
Which was really fun.
Yeah, I bet it was. I bet it, I should probably listen to that. I bet I would like that album.
Yeah, it's a good one.
The blue one?
Yeah, the blue and the yellow one is a double disc. It was really good.
I never followed his lead. I never did for some reason. I think it's a violin guy and the sax guy.
Huh.
Yeah.
It was just too much.
Yeah,
for me. I didn't understand what was going on. And the snare drum was tuned too high.
It's really tight.
For me. Yeah.
Really, on all the Dave Matthews stuff.
Yeah. That's just initially what happens. You know how like when you hear something, you're just like, I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I totally know that. And whenever I was a big Dave Matthews fan in high school too. I think that was probably the first band that I ever really kind of became a fan of, in the sense of, you know, counting the number of shows I went to and buying the t-shirts and stuff like that.
Right.
But
Did he do like a bootlegging thing, like the Dead, you could get the shows
exactly.
to plug in your thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. He did a lot of that kind of stuff.
That's
too.
That's cool.
But I remember there being a lot of people that didn't get into it, didn't understand it, mm-hmm. or they were often people that did, on the other hand, get into Grateful Dead or get into some other kind of, you know, jam
Fish
or something else.
Widespread.
They thought Dave wasn't the ticket. And I...
I could see how some guys might think that Dave is a little too commercial. Too many hits with that guy.
Sure.
He's got a ton now. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes those guys are like, oh, I liked him when nobody liked him.
Yeah.
Right. And you're always going to get that.
Yeah.
But it's funny, when I listen, I mean, you know, I respect the Grateful Dead, but that was... same similar kind of emotion when I listened to the whole catalog. I was like, it just doesn't really grab me.
It's got some, I mean they got some great songs, just like Dave. I've heard songs of Dave Matthews where I'm like, shit, that's a good song. How did you get into music, James? What happened in Houston?
You know, what happened in that town? What doesn't happen in that town? I got into music from my dad. Dad was a big hippie, the long-haired, you know, style from North Carolina, the rebellious from his own family. And the rest of my family really wasn't hugely into music, but my dad, I guess part of his own rebellion was a huge passion for tunes. And when I was growing up as a little kid, I would hear him play songs on guitar all the time. He never did it as a career, but he just did it as a hobby.
Yeah.
And he just would play all the time, and I remember being small enough to sit in his guitar case and him play Sweet Baby James and,
oh, that's cool.
and stuff like that.
So you guys had some similar,
music guys. I'm actually sort of, in this past few months, we've done a few interviews, and I'm realizing that Jason's dad was as passionate about James Taylor as my father might have been.
Yeah.
I was actually named after him. So,
wow.
And so there was a heavy dose of that, but my dad liked, he liked a lot of Motown stuff, and he liked a lot of, anything that was sort of, not necessarily classic rock, but anything that was sort of lyrically driven and good melodies that came out of the 70s type stuff was things. But my start personally in music, I mean, I'm sure that planted the seed. I didn't have any interest in picking up a guitar. Dad tried to put me on it, and fingers got sore, and I said, screw it.
Yeah. You know?
But Grandpa decided that I should learn to play the violin. So he went to the violin shop, picked up a small children's violin, and bought me 7 lessons. And I went in and hated it. I fucking hated it.
I could see that.
It was...
It sounded terrible.
Yeah, look well, cool.
I
mean,
I got the basics of it, but they kept me on one string. I couldn't learn anything that I wanted to learn. It was all classically driven. It just wasn't fun. So I gave it up after the 7th lesson. And then in high school, my grandfather is also fancies himself. He's an amateur inventor. And
that's cool.
Yeah, so he's created multiple things that he's put patents on over the years.
Somebody else was here, and somebody invented something there too.
Yeah,
what was it? I mean, did he get patents on?
He was a computer programmer for NASA, so he did a few like games and certain things like that never really made it big. But
he got the patent on it.
But he got patents on them. So who knows? Maybe somebody will still pull out those old floppy disks. And
wait, what did he do at NASA?
He was a computer programmer. Okay. Yeah, he got in. My grandpa, I guess, was of the older variety, but really got into the computer side of things. Yeah, so that was
how old is he? Like, is he still alive?
He just turned 84. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, that's a pretty old guy to be a computer guy.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not the computer generation.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah, he was definitely. You know, he wasn't the youngin that came into the computer.
Yeah.
He was on the ground level, I guess. He believed in it all. Remember, he tells stories of whenever computers were the size of your apartment.
Oh my God! Yeah, and they could only like tell time.
Right.
Like they could have been like
1 + 1 = 2.
Yeah.
Oh my God! It did it.
Yeah, yeah. On the tape and stuff. I got into it. I worked with this guy. You guys know who Fred Marr is?
No, I don't.
He's this guy that's a drummer and producer guy, but he did some cool records like Lou Reed New York and Matthew Sweet Girlfriend. But he was obsessed with you know, computer culture, and he had all these documentaries on, like more than one, because I remember when I was making this album, I saw like maybe 4 documentaries on Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, because of how they kind of came up together.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But all those sort of like just the evolution of the computer is just unbelievable. It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that you can't lie to a chick and be like, oh yeah, I'm the drummer from Pearl Jam.
And
at a bar.
Like, oh, hang on.
Because she's like,
Google.
She can instantly.
Yeah, Google.
Out.
Nope.
No, you're not.
That's not you, homeboy. Yeah. Not that I ran around in the 90s.
Yeah.
Not that you tried
to tell your personal experience with this.
So you've heard.
No, I said I was the drummer of Nirvana, but before he became really famous. I'm the old drummer before they got that guy. The guy from the Foo Fighters. the old guy. So you guys met here?
We did.
What brought you here? Music?
So I graduated from Auburn with a finance degree.
Right.
I'd worked at a small boutique mortgage banking firm over the summers, the last 2 years of college, and it was basically just like almost working at a frat party. I mean, these guys were pretty young, they were 25 to 30, making a ton of money. It was before the recession and everything. So really fun, great internship, like learned a ton. I was planning on going to work for them. Had a couple of job offers, and I was like, you know what? I'm 22 years old. I might as well go out west for a year and just work at a dude ranch and then work on the slopes and then come home. Just
Oh, and then get in fight. Like, get out
then,
there.
Yeah.
Do a little Ernest Hemingway stuff.
Yeah. Do it for a year because, I'll meet somebody or something else will happen and I won't be able to do it. And I'll be like, man,
exactly.
I would have loved to have spent a summer in Jackson Hole and a winter in Colorado or whatever.
That's
so,
really cool.
I had some friends that had done that before, and they'd worked on some dude ranches in Jackson Hole and various places in Wyoming. And so I was like, that would be awesome. So I was planning on that. Buddy of mine that I went to high school with, we met up over Christmas break, our senior year of college, at a show in Birmingham. We were just catching up. I hadn't seen him in a while. He actually went to school with James.
Were you at the Saint?
No, we were at Work
right.
Play.
Is it the Saint? No. No, that's in New Jersey. I'm talking about...
The Nick?
The Nick.
Yeah. Yeah. Right downtown Southside.
Love it.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
So we're at work, play at a show. We're catching up and, you know, post-college plans, you know, 6 months away is graduation. So what are we doing? And he was like, oh, I'm going to move out to Austin. I was like, oh, that's cool. What are you doing? He's like, well, I'm going to get into the business side of music. I want to work for a label or management group and manage artists. I was like, oh, that's really cool. Said he had an uncle who started an investment banking company out there. And I was like, well, that's in finance. All right. And we were talking and he was kind of selling me on the idea of Austin. And I, you know, born in San Antonio, I'd been to Austin once to see the Bats when I was three. Don't remember it. But I was, you know, after the show was over, I went up to him. I was like, Whit, you need a roommate, don't you? He was like, well, yeah, I hadn't really found anybody yet. I was like, all right, man, give me a week. I was like, give me 1 week. I want to kind of ask around, do a little due diligence, and I'm in. He was like, yeah. Well, what are you talking about? I was like, I'll go to Austin. That'd be great. I could keep playing music, find a job. I heard it's a great town. So I did just that. I took a couple days to ask around, and everyone I talked to was like, go to Austin. Get out of Birmingham. Awesome. Go. So that's where I met James. Moved here in August met James and one of his college buddies.
Were you going to school here? Was that your James?
No,
what'd
I
you
actually
do?
Went to school in Tennessee.
Oh.
I went to Suwannee. University of the South, south of Nashville, and then ended up back over here after college.
What was your plan going to be when you went to college?
I was political science pre-med. Actually, medicine. If you ask anyone from my childhood, family or friends or otherwise, they to this day when they find out that I'm playing music, they go, "Aren't you supposed to be a doctor?"
Yeah, because you walked around saying it.
I always knew that's what I wanted to do. Yeah, and to be honest, I still do. It hadn't changed. Music was an accident that I've been thoroughly enjoying. After college for me, I was applying to med schools, but I was kind of burned out on school, as everybody is after you've done grade school and then you've done 4 years of college. And my best friend at the time was like, hey, do you really want to go to grad school yet? Or do you really want to get a job? And I said, you know, I would love to just blow off steam for a few years. He goes, well, what about a cross-country bicycle ride? So, right
after
college...
You guys are really adventurous guys.
So, right after college...
Yeah, you guys, one guy wants to work on a dude ranch, the other guy wants to take a bike ride around the world.
Well, yeah, and so... Dylan and I, after college, decided we were going to do a bicycle ride and just... We found a map of the United States and found the spots that we had never been to that we wanted to see, and just kind of connected the dots and planned a route, and the rest we figured out as we went. But we started in Bellingham, Washington, and finished in Charleston, South Carolina. And that was amazing.
No shit?
Yeah, we did it.
Wow.
And then
there was a charity component. I mean, you guys were...
Yeah, well, we raised... I mean, we figured if we're going to go that far, we might as well raise some money and, you know, carry a flag.
Yeah.
So we... Dylan's mother had lupus.
Okay.
So we raised it for the Lupus Foundation of America. And all said and done, I think we raised over $20,000.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
So God, you guys are nice guys, too.
Sometimes. We have moments. But... Dylan and I, at that time, had been playing music in back when we were in college, just at local bars in Nashville and stuff like that. And then in the middle of the bike ride, we shacked up in this small town called Eagle Pritchard, Murray in northern Idaho for a couple weeks because we ended up getting a sweet deal working at this restaurant. Which is a whole story in of itself. And actually,
it sounds like something that happened in the 60s.
Yeah. Right?
Actually, that was the name of our very first band. Jason and I used to be in a group called the Eagle Pritchard Murray Band. And that was because when Dylan and I were in northern Idaho in this area called Eagle Pritchard Murray, that was where we decided to move to Austin and start playing music. Because we'd been playing some music in this small town. And we were like, this is fun. We should just, if we're going to really do this blow off steam for a couple of years thing, let's move to Austin or Nashville. I was from Houston, and Austin was the place that we would skip school and high school and come party on the weekend. So yeah. I was like, Austin was awesome. Let's do that. When we were on our bike ride, we came through Dallas, and Dylan had never seen it, so we drove down. And one night, we came into Austin. It was like a Tuesday. You know, a Tuesday on 6th Street. I don't even know if they still do these specials, but they're like the $1 you call it.
Sure. And I mean, I don't know. I don't go. I'm 45. I don't.
Well, we came into town, and at that point, you know, we came out and we got absolutely obliterated for $16 a piece, and that was all we could talk about the next day. And we were like, as we were driving back to Dallas, we were like, well, Austin it is. We've got to move to that town. It's too cheap.
Yeah.
We'll be able to have a great time blowing off steam, and we won't have to ask mom and dad for
money. Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's really how I ended up in Austin. And then we thought, well, man, it'd really be cool if we got a gig on 6th Street. And, you know, music has just turned into a whole other beast.
Where's Dylan now?
Dylan took the 2-year plan. He stuck on the trajectory, and he ended up going back to grad school. So he's wrapping up now at Vanderbilt.
Wow.
Getting his master's in business. But
that's a good story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I caught the bug on the music side of things.
And then, so you guys met.
So we met at a dinner. All the Swanee kids. There's actually a lot of Swanee kids that live here. But Tuesday night dinners. Every Tuesday would be a potluck dinner for all the Swanee alum, like young alum. And so we just go bring some wine, bring some food, and get together. And I lived with 3 other Swanee guys that all went to school with James and Dylan and a bunch of other folks. So that's how we met. And it was, they literally just finished their bike ride. So they were in town, like seeing everybody they hadn't seen for a while. And I met, and it was basically a connection of, oh, you play music? Dylan plays music. James plays music. Y'all should play together. And we were all unemployed at the time. And we'd, you know, go out to 6th Street, get drunk, and come home and just be jamming out on guitars. And after doing that for so long, we would go down and see people on 6th Street and be like, well, we could totally do that. Or we're much better than those guys, or so we thought. And so we,
or like some of the guys when you're walking and the doors open.
Exactly. Yeah, you walk by and there's this one dude, just singer-songwriter, singing his heart out, you know, and playing Every Rose Has a Thorn. And you're like, come on, man, every time. So it's, you know.
Well, the sad thing is there is, you know, there's like 8 people at a table giving him $30 to play that fucking Every Rose Has a
Thorn. They want to hear it. Trust me, we know.
Those people are the ones that kept our career afloat. Yeah.
So we thought, man, we can do this. I had a PA from college. I bought a PA in college so we could start playing around at bars that didn't have one, or private parties or whatever.
Right.
So I had all the equipment, and we basically played the same style of music. Counting Crows, Ryan Adams, Jack Johnson, Dave Matthews. So we all played basically the same stuff and realized we knew a lot of the same things. And James and I started writing together. And we had our first gig actually opening up for MC Overlord.
Yeah.
Hip hop artist.
Yeah.
Somehow became good friends with him. And he was like, all right, got a show next week. What's your band name? And that's when we were like, what? So that's how Eagle Pritchard Murray came about. One of our friends was like,
"Yeah, he's working with bands."
Yeah, he is.
I was at a place the other day, and the band that he was working with came and played.
Yeah, he's been managing some artists. Yeah. I haven't seen a show of his in a while. I don't know if he's playing around very much, but
no, he has a podcast.
He's got a podcast.
I mean, Austin. I'm going to be on it like in a couple weeks.
You are as well. Uh-huh. Nice. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah, we did that with Patrick before MC Overlord got on there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We used to see him with Boombox all the time on Tuesdays at Lucky Lounge back in the day. So that's where we first met him. But good friend of ours, and he really helped kind of launch us out there by giving us our first gig. So eternally grateful to
that
guy.
Where was that gig?
It was at 1-to-1 on 5th and Brazos back when it was still in the corner.
Yeah.
That's
where I saw him the other day.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. At the new 1-to-1.
Yeah.
The new one, yeah.
That's a good place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You guys played there yet?
We haven't played the new 1-to-1.
No, we haven't.
No.
Okay, so wait a minute. So then I read that you guys started playing funk. Is that so?
No.
Or
so
what?
Okay, well,
what's going on in that bio?
When you move into a new town, you don't have any kind of reputation, and every bar wants to know what your draw is.
Right.
You tend to cater to a certain style of music. And so
that immediately gets people in and on the floor interested.
And so even though our kind of common ground was the more Counting Crows, Ryan Adams, Matt Nathanson type stuff, you know, John Mayer, or, you know, Old Train, that was the kind of stuff that we really enjoyed writing. We ended up started writing more bluesy rock stuff because anything that we could do to get people dancing.
Oh, to get them up. Yeah, yeah.
And
just get people moving.
A,
And I fell in love with that style of music. I mean, it's fun, you know, the energy.
It is fun.
And we really enjoyed doing that. And we did it for about 3 years, and we started playing a bunch of fraternity parties and corporate events and things of that nature. And so,
how did those come about from playing those Sixth Street, sweating it out in the thing? There's a guy there having a drink. It just turns out that guy's the guy that makes the choice for the law firm party at Christmas. Yep. Boom, couple grand.
That's just totally like that.
Yeah. That's totally it. And we did that for, you know, a good while. And then we kind of, I guess, realized that we wanted to get back to our roots after doing that for a little while. It started blurring the lines between cover music and original music. And we decided that we wanted to really pursue the original material and just separate it. So we actually still have a cover band. We keep a lot of the same guys from EPMB turned into a group called The Good Knights. And we still do corporate events and fraternity parties.
Smart. I'm in one called Skyrocket.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nice.
So we keep that, but then...
Look at that.
that way we could focus all of our original intent on the Roosevelts.
Just a real quick aside. What's the focus of the Good Knights? What's your repertoire?
It's turned into a lot of like Motown. We'll do a lot of Stevie Wonder, Bill Withers.
Oh, that's really cool.
We do a lot of... surprisingly a lot of weddings, and we don't ever market ourselves, so it's all word of mouth. Weddings and corporate parties. We did a fraternity party a few weeks ago, I guess, but
that keeps you alive, man. I'll tell you.
Man, it's absolutely easy money. It's fun to play it too, because it's what's cool is the band The Good Knights is basically a hodgepodge of musicians from all these other bands that are always playing their stuff, so when we get together it's fun to just jam out to some Signed, Sealed, Delivered for, you know, an hour or whatever that might be. Play some Bill Withers, play some you know, whatever it is. So
it's not even just Motown. It's, you know, we end up throwing stuff like, I mean, depending upon the situation for weddings, we of course cater to certain things, but for corporate parties, whatever, we'll do, you know, even Damien Rice or,
we'll do some Dave Black Matthews Street.
Or I mean, Black Street, yeah, or, you know, whatever. It's just
Black Street.
No Diggity.
I like the way you work it.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
no
yeah.
No Diggity.
Yeah, yeah.
Got the bag.
So it's stuff that we like. In fact, a lot of the number one comment we'll get is, man, you guys are like my favorite iPod playlist. But like,
that's cool.
Kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's eclectic.
Okay, so then when you guys were doing that, you decided you needed to focus on the songwriting. And, I mean, you guys are really good songwriters. It's kind of weird that you're just kind of like, just would start writing songs.
Well, I think that's
I wanted to go on a bike ride. I wanted to not go to college for a while. And just weird. I mean, it's cool as hell.
Yeah, I didn't... You know, when you start songwriting, you don't trust your own shit. You think it's all bad. I mean, I don't know. I guess everybody has a different ego about it.
I was acutely aware of how bad mine was. I mean, like, I knew, because I knew people, regular grown-up songwriters, and I was a kid.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, you writing songs? I'd be like, you know, I started one the other day. I'd be like, oh. I have nothing to say. I'm 13 or 14.
Yeah. Right.
So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, I liked it, but I didn't know that anybody else would like it. I think what happened was that at some point along the way, the original material started getting enough comments from people that I respected and not just people that I thought were blowing smoke.
Yeah.
And that I realized that I maybe wasn't a complete hack at songwriting after all. And then whenever we got into the sort of pre-production side of things and really kind of... actually, once we met Dwight Baker...
Okay.
It sort of... validated and channeled the style of my writing, you know.
Well, maybe he saw you. He said you got like a diamond in the rough.
Yeah,
and I know where to smooth some shit off.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And because he does, he knows how to get from point A to point B.
He's got a great ear.
And yeah, he's got a great ear, and he really does a lot of work, a lot of really great work.
Oh yeah,
he knows how to tune in to who you are. It's not just a
he doesn't lay a trip on you. You don't sound like, oh, you're gonna sound like Alpha Rev now or something.
Right. Exactly.
Well, what I really like about Dwight, and I think James agrees, is he's just brutally honest.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, he's a great songwriter and can give you great direction. But with us, he didn't necessarily help in that regard. So he didn't sit down and be like, all right, let's write this verse together. It was, you guys are smart enough, you're creative enough, you've got what it takes, just don't be cheesy with it, don't make some stupid lyric, and don't sacrifice just to have a line in a song. And so
that
we
just
went in
inspired
and,
me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Good.
I mean, it was brutally, we printed out all the lyrics and with a red Sharpie, just go through and destroy everything. this word is the worst word. Don't ever use that. Don't use this line. Don't do this. Move this down. I mean, literally, it looked like a... I know for one of the songs, we had to rewrite literally every line but one. And so I was just like, this is the worst. But it was great. I mean, it put us to the test of songwriting and really making the best effort that we could and not just kind of half-ass it and do some cheesy lyric just because it rhymes or because it felt good.
Yeah, it was great because Dwight knew that he seemed to know that the lyrics were there, that we had, they were in us. You know, it wasn't like he ever... with that, even with his heavy red Sharpie, it was like he just knew
you could do
that
better.
You could do better. Yeah. And if he
didn't think you could do better, you wouldn't just be insulting him.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
He's a really nice guy.
I have no doubt that if he thought I couldn't write something better, that he would have said, "All right, let's cut this." Yeah. You know, I think he'd heard. I threw him the whole catalog of every song I'd basically ever written, so he knew that the material was in there. And you know, I think that a coach or somebody to sort of whoop your ass. I don't think there's anything in this life that doesn't get better when somebody whoops your ass a little bit, you know, and
in the right way. Yeah.
In the right way.
And if
exactly.
they know what they're doing, some people are just assholes.
Right.
True.
And there
exactly.
are other people, the assholes, that really don't teach you much.
Right.
They think they're teaching you something by just being mean, but this guy's just being firm and he's teaching you something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, once we met Dwight, I guess, you could say believed in myself. You know, I mean, I knew that this songwriting.
That's what a producer is supposed to do.
Right.
Yep. You know what I mean? He's supposed to make you feel and like do your best, and like you want to do. Then when you go write songs, when you go give him those looks, you'd be like, "God, man, it's gonna blow him away."
Right.
Yep. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a cool thing.
Sure.
It's like a really good coach.
Sure.
Like, just wait till he sees me run the play now.
Right.
Yeah.
Fucking, I've been working on this shit.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, what a great experience.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
And so what that also gave you, like a fast forward experience, you know what I mean, where you get a lot better so much faster than you would have without that person.
Sure.
Or maybe
you
would have never gotten better, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sure. Maybe
you
I would have given maybe around. I would have gone back to med school, you know. That was honestly the thought at the time. You know, it was like, we've done this cover band sort of thing for a while, and we've been writing songs, and I'm, you know, proud of where we've gone, but I was trying to decide whether I wanted to dive into this crazy business of music that's so unpredictable. And I was, and at that moment in time, I was thinking about, you know, maybe this is the time to get back on track. You've blown off your steam. Let's go back to grad school and do med school and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, God put certain people in your path at certain points, and
you got Dylan over there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you recall him?
Bob?
No,
oh,
isn't that your friend Dylan?
Oh, Dylan, yeah, exactly.
Dylan, man, I don't know. I think I'm going to go back. I think my 2 years is up 4 years later.
Right. Something was still calling me. I couldn't leave yet. So.
Yeah.
So here we are, and man, what a ride it's been.
It's only been a year.
Yeah, it's only been a little over a year. Well, it's been 2 years since that, but the Roosevelts have only been a band for about a year.
Our first show is November 3rd at Stubbs. So yeah, just over a year.
And who was that? Who was that opening for?
We played with Danny Malone. It was CD release.
He's a fantastic artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. That
Danny
was actually the first time
I
met him.
Four houses down from me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
That's cool.
Same, over there on the east side.
The same hood, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. He's amazing.
Yeah, Danny's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did one of these with him live. At a Hotel Vegas.
Oh, awesome.
It's pretty cool.
Oh,
yeah, it was
cool.
Very entertaining. He's really funny.
Yeah.
He's a great songwriter.
Sure,
yes.
Absolutely.
So you guys, I saw that you guys are doing a show with Bob Schneider.
Mm-hmm. This New Year's Eve.
For New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, you're playing like the Paramount Theater.
I'm pumped. That place
like
is
a little
awesome.
Over a year ago.
Yeah, you know,
you
it's
weren't,
funny.
You weren't even the Roosevelt.
You know, I almost wasn't nervous until this moment because I'm realizing that here I am telling you, man, I moved here, you know, 7 years ago or 6 years ago.
I just wanted a show on 6th
Street.
Wanted
to get a show on 6th Street. And you're right. Yeah. It's a, you know, it's been, it's a.
Paramount's
now
amazing.
It's Paramount.
It's a huge, awesome old venue. I've never actually seen a show there. I've seen some comedy shows there. But
who'd you see there?
I saw.
Well, you saw that bad one, didn't you?
Well, no,
ooh,
it wasn't.
It was bad.
It wasn't bad. It was just.
Dave Chappelle.
Thank you. I just totally blank. I saw Dave Chappelle when he came through a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
And it wasn't bad. He was just
right.
heckled by everybody, and he would answer the hecklers, and then it just continued. So it was literally 2 hours of people shouting out, quotes from the Chappelle Show or do this or do that. And so he would try to get through a joke and then someone would shout. I mean, it was, the crowd was awful, but the venue was really nice.
Yeah.
I saw Ray LaMontagne in there and man, that blew me away. Ooh.
He's good.
That space is cool.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good. Well, man, your EP is fantastic. And thanks. It just came out. When did it come out?
We actually had our CD release back in May.
Okay.
The physical copy, but we just released it digitally November 5th.
So it's just recently available everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's available. It's not November.
If people go to wearetheroosevelts.com.
Yeah,
December 3rd is when it went out, but it's all online. Okay. iTunes, Spotify, you can make a playlist with it, you can
share it out.
Share it, all that kind of stuff.
Tweet us, like us, all that good stuff. Yeah.
So what else have you done for the last year? I mean, you put out this record, you did the thing at Stubbs with Danny Malone.
Yep. We had we did a 2.5, almost a 3-week tour throughout the Southeast. So, had a kickoff show. We did a.
Did Dylan come out?
Dylan came out. We went through Nashville. Yeah.
Did he feel bad?
We stayed with Dylan. Actually, we stayed at his house.
I don't know. Did
he, like when you guys went back afterwards and had some drinks? I see, like, man, I should have just stuck in the group.
He seemed. Just from what I can tell, he seemed pretty pumped. He was pretty proud of us.
Okay.
He's
like the Stuart Sutcliffe of you guys. Hopefully he doesn't end up, you know, dead from a brain hemorrhage. But you know, the guy that like, hey guys, I gotta quit the group. I'm gonna stay here with Astrid.
No, he was good. We did it was like 16 shows in 16 days pretty much.
Wow.
It was a lot. It was about 4,300 miles. Went through Nashville, went through Birmingham, which is great. It was a big kind of homecoming for me. It was the first time we played there. Had a amazing crowd come out to that. Played 2 dates in Nashville, had some great meetings with a bunch of industry folks there. We stayed with Dylan, so that was really nice. I talked to him tonight. He's staying with me over Christmas. They're coming through for a night, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
So tell him I said hi. I don't know him, but
I will do it.
I know that he was part of the Roosevelt's early beginnings and the National Bike Ride.
Exactly.
That's right.
So you did that tour. Where where else did you play? 16? Did you go to like North Carolina?
We did. Yeah. So we went to Tulsa. We did St. Louis, Charlottesville, Virginia.
Now, were you opening for people, or were you packaged with something?
It was a mix. We basically planned and routed this ourselves with the help of our buddy Whitaker.
Okay.
And he did a ton of legwork. He knew some bands that were out and about, and so paired us up with them. So there were some shows where we were supporting. There were some where we were headlining. We played Kane's Ballroom in Tulsa, which is an amazing
fantastic
place.
Venue. Yeah, yeah,
it's good. Played with the Dirty River Boys. So you know, we opened up for them, and then there were some shows where we were headlining. So it was kind of a mix. But
it's not many venues where Bob Wills and the Sex Pistols played.
Exactly.
That you know place, what I mean? It's fucking, that's awesome.
And it's both on the wall.
Yeah. And now we both played there too.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, Bob Wills, the Sex Pistols, and us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
That's awesome to be part of something like that.
Yeah,
it's
no,
cool to go sure. and just see, like, just seeing all the show posters, both past and future.
Right.
I mean, seeing the people that come through that place, I was like, how are we playing here? Yeah. it's pretty phenomenal. So, it was fun. It was kind of a weird, it was actually our first tour outside of little weekend stuff here and there throughout Texas and Louisiana.
Yeah, so yeah. The first one where it's, you know.
The first Roosevelt's tour.
And it was just the two of you guys, or did
no,
you take
the band? We took
the whole band.
Who goes with you when you travel?
It depends on who's available.
Okay. But focus of the Roosevelt's is you two guys. Do you do some stuff where it's just you two guys?
Yeah, we'll do some duo stuff.
Radio stuff. Or whatever.
Yeah. When we go in for an interview or something like that, it's usually just the two of us. A lot of times, like, you know, say Charlie Mars is traveling and doing a solo thing, we might do a duo thing. Or Bob Schneider, if he does a solo thing, we'll do a duo thing.
You guys open for, go around opening for Charlie Mars and Bob Schneider? Yeah, if he's doing a solo thing, you know, we'll bring the band and whatnot.
We did.
Not on the
but
regular.
That's great.
But we that's why it's been such a whirlwind year, is that it's just been received so well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's been good. The tour was fantastic. It was kind of weird because when we got back, everybody was like, oh, so tell me the drama. Yeah. Were there a ton of girls that y'all hooked up with? Did you guys get in a fight? Did y'all get in a wreck?
Yeah, well, because
you guys
are cute.
Stolen? Thanks, appreciate it.
Yeah,
you're not too
I
bad
could
yourself.
See the ladies, thanks. I could see there being some like a girl showing up at the next town?
Well, hopefully, because this last tour there weren't. I mean, okay, there were a lot of people there.
No, but you know, like, oh man, hey, Wendy's here from Birmingham. Like,
hello, nine. Wendy.
You know what it is, Johnny? It's just the beard. If like.
That's why I'm growing. Look at me.
If I get rid of this, I'll look like a 13-year-old. If we passed out drunk
and somebody shaved our beards off, we would lose our entire sex appeal.
I like.
At least
I
Jason
like,
would. I don't know.
Oh, for sure.
I like it. And I think it's cool. I think it's cool that you didn't have to go like the solo artist route or like the whole band route. Like, I personally think, you know, like the... even T-Rex was like that. They was mm-hmm. like mostly just the two dudes mm-hmm. in the pictures.
Yeah, Hall & Oates. It's been it's cool because it allows us the flexibility to do those quick little solo or duo shows, you know, on the road. Or we could, I mean, we talked about doing a tour through Colorado, just the two of us. It's a lot cheaper. It's a lot easier for us to just go.
That's what I was wondering. Because most of the people that I know that tour like that, they try to just bear it down as simple as possible.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so it's always fun to bring the whole band, and that tour was awesome. When we do it again here in a couple months, we'll definitely take the whole band. But it's easy for us to, you know, shoot down to San Antonio and play at Sam's with Bob Schneider, just do a duo acoustic thing or whatever.
I love that place, so, Jesus.
Yeah,
that's a cool
there
spot too.
A month ago, 2 months ago, yeah. It was awesome. So nice. Everyone was so nice there. The venue's great.
Well, that
the crowd,
you know,
was awesome.
I think we played the night. No, we didn't.
You weren't
it
there.
It was a couple days before you guys.
Not okay. The Miles Zuniga Gin Blossom show, was it?
No, I was in Skyrocket played there.
Oh, okay.
But I remember seeing Bob's name up there.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Sorry, go ahead. Someone was going to say something.
Oh, something. I was just going to comment on the duo thing. You know, this industry is, I feel like, burnout so quick and apparent. I mean, it's a hard business, you know, and one of the main reasons why once EPMB dissolved and I knew I wanted to go in this direction with the new songs, I was like, man, I'm watching all my friends go solo routes and they're just slugging it so hard.
And you're like, all alone.
I know, and you're by yourself and you don't have anyone to like share the blame.
I know. Or even know? Share the blame or just like
or to carry
be
the
with
way.
When you're bored.
He shares plenty of blame, trust me.
Do you guys share a lot of
great
the same
having
duty?
Jason at that time. It's like, man, it's, you know, let's do this together. Because if we're not going to do it together, I think I'm not going to do it. You know?
Yeah. Do you guys share a lot of the? Because you sing that in that video.
Uh huh.
You sing that song.
In that video? I do everybody most of the knows. Singing.
Yeah.
Okay.
But and Jason sings as well. It mm-hmm. just sort of worked out that he's doing most of the harmony work.
Right.
And that was sort of how we ended up crafting it in the studio.
Yeah. But, do you guys like the Everly Brothers? And stuff like that?
The who now?
The Everly Brothers.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Kind of blacked out for a second.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with all their stuff.
Wow.
The Avid Brothers, for sure. Those guys, I think, are are awesome.
Yeah.
I have a lot of people compare us to them. They always ask, who do you compare yourselves to? And I think that's a pretty good comparison as far as genre. Kind of the folksy rock Americana style.
I like what you guys, I mean, I really do. I like your album. It has it also has focus and it has purpose. You know what I mean? Like, it's going somewhere. Mm-hmm. When you listen to it, it's really good, but you're like, you know what, I could hear this outside of just, you know, my computer. I could hear this in a movie. I could see this. Was your video on CMT? It was on CMT.com or something?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
You can see how people latch onto that stuff. I get this. This is really good.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that I think you just sort of, I don't know if you luck into it or what. I mean, you know, a huge part of that is your producer, for sure, you know, helping to craft sonically your sound, but it's also your own taste in music and the stuff that you're writing. And
sure.
You never know how accessible it's going to be, but that word accessible keeps coming up. People describe our stuff as something they can kind of, that people can easily latch on to.
Because you know what?
I never realized that I wrote that way.
It is very accessible, but it's not like sugar candy pop that mm-hmm. is too,
well,
it's
I can't
too
stand sugar candy
overdone,
pop.
overthought or over
yeah.
sold at you, you know, over commercialized or something. It, Yeah, you like it. It's not offending you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
no, I mean, I know that it's, you hear people, you know, where they get wrapped up. We're obviously not in you know, this level of the game, but you hear people that get wrapped up in label deals, or whatever, where somebody forced them to put out a single that they didn't really like, and you know, that was some pop cheese single, but they knew they could make a lot of money off of. I would chop off my left arm. I just simply couldn't do a complete cheesy tune. You know, I mean, Jason was probably laughing over it because he's like, "Man, we need the money."
Yeah,
let's write as many of those as we can.
I can't do it.
You know,
well, that's the cool thing about it is that, I mean, you guys are obviously going to get known as songwriters, and people want to write with you. And you, there, you got your cheese outlet.
There it is.
Make someone else cheese.
Gotta have that cheese outlet.
There you go. Or maybe
the cheese outlet. Yeah, all right. Need someone else to sing it.
Yeah, it's the cheese outlet store. I need a cheese outlet. You guys are also, you're going to be playing a Rock the Boat.
Rock Boat,
what's
yeah.
What's going on? Rock Boat. Sorry.
So we did...
Rock the Boat.
Rock the Boat. We won't be rocking the boat.
Rock the Boat, baby.
Tip the boat, don't
so
tip the boat.
Oh. We, when we were going through Atlanta, we stopped by Sixth Man Productions or Sixth Man Studios. They put on the Rock Boat, which is basically it's a four-day cruise. It's like ACL on the water. It's 30 to 35 bands. You play, yeah, every band plays at least three times. And you sail to this island out of Miami. You go down to this island that they own. They put on a huge festival there, and then you sail back, and it's music basically 24/7.
That's so cool.
So it's, we did a, just did an acoustic performance in their studios on the way to a show, in Buckhead. And, they filmed everything, and when we were done, they actually have this on camera. It's pretty funny and awkward to watch. But when we were done, he was like, "All right, I'm gonna try something real quick." And so he's like, "Oh, you guys get together in a line." And we're like, "Oh, we're taking a photo." So we're like standing there, like, "Jesus."
Yeah.
And he's like, "No, I'm still videoing. I'm not actually taking a picture." And so he's like, "I just want to know. We've never actually done this, but we loved you guys. I looked around. Everyone gave a thumbs up. Do you want to be on the next Rock Boat?" We're like, "Huh?" He was like, "Yeah, we've never actually had someone play in our office and then ask them to be on it the same day or at all. So do you guys want to be on our next Rock Boat?" And we're like, "Absolutely." I mean, you go in there and there's posters of, you know, pictures of the whole crowd. There's 3,000 people on this boat just tuned in to you. You know, they're there for music, which is pretty awesome. So we're pumped. It leaves in February. We're going to do a little mini tour, a couple shows down to Miami and then a couple shows back. February 22nd is when it leaves, and it's going to be an absolute blast. I'm so excited.
That sounds awesome.
So it's basically,
I want to go. I was looking at the list of the people that were playing.
It's like early, it's like 90s and early 2000 bands. It's awesome. It's like Sister Hazel and Collective Soul.
Yeah.
Edwin McClain. Like,
yeah, it's like my high school dream.
And like a singer from Live.
Yep. He'll be there.
Yeah, singer from Live.
Because what's weird is a really, really good friend of mine that I toured with for a long time is now the singer of Live.
Oh, really? No way.
Yeah, Chris Shin. Weird.
That's awesome.
I know.
Small world.
It's pretty good. It is a small world.
Yeah, so that'll be fun. The Rock Boat's going to be pretty awesome.
So it's a regular cruise?
So it's they do this, like I think, twice a year.
That sounds awesome.
There are a couple companies that do it, but they do. I know 311 does one every year where they go down and have the same thing. So
doesn't like John Mayer do one?
John Mayer does one. Yeah, he did one a few years ago with them from the same company. Zach Brown did one. Leonard Skinner did one. And so it's always a couple like main headlining acts, and then, you know, 20 to 30 up and coming artists
and
or
it's
other
for, like,
bands.
It's for like those. Those people that are coming, they're fucking fans.
They come
and so they probably encourage you, like, "Hey, hang out on the Lido deck."
Oh yeah,
and, you know,
probably.
Well, it's great. Folks. They gave us, you know, two ocean view cabins, and we're just gonna be chilling, listening to bands, and writing with other people because we're all on the same floor. So it's just
that's really what I'm
take
most
this
looking
time
forward
to.
Honestly,
just network. You know, the Mowglis will be there. Those guys are awesome. Bronze Radio Return. We've hung out with those guys before. They're really cool guys. So like, just going to write with them or just jam and just play and hang out.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I mean, it's hard to get musicians in town for 3 hours, you know, so to smash them on a boat together for 4 days is bound to yield something.
4 days is great.
We're either going to all love each other or freaking hate each other.
No, you'll love each other, man. Imagine how much fun that would be.
There's booze and there's beaches. I imagine that love is more likely than hate.
Yeah, definitely. And you guys have that going on. You're obviously probably writing songs for whatever's going to happen next with the Roosevelts. Sure. Where'd you get your name? What's, is it after one of the Teddy or FDR?
No.
It was a last minute decision.
As we were in the studio with Dwight, we had JJ Johnson and Dave come in and play. Mm-hmm. And Dwight was asking us, he hadn't really focused on a name. We told him we didn't have a name. We were working on one. And so he kind of let it go and focused on music. And so right before they came into the studio, we're in there working on some lyrics, working on some arrangements. And he goes, "All right, guys, I need a name. These guys are going to be here. And before they leave, I'd like to tell them, here's who you just played with."
Yeah.
And so we're kind of racking our brain.
And it was President's Day.
We had a couple.
February 22nd was the day that we started recording. So we were just pulling at strings because coming up with the band name is the most ridiculous.
We had a couple ideas and we were like, running through, and Dwight was just being his typical brutally honest, like, that is the worst name.
Yeah, and we had some pretty awful names, you know. But, you know, especially whenever you're still, and at that stage, we were still sort of, there were sonic things we were trying to figure out about what our sound was, you know, so you...
You don't want to be called Black Sabbath if you're a country band.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but we knew which songs we were going to be recording. We had them all arranged. We kind of knew what direction we're going in. When Jason actually just started running on the list of presidents' names. I mean, we went through the Nixons and the Kennedys and the whatevers.
True, because there is the Nixons.
Right, exactly. Yep.
That's why I was like, wow.
Most of them had been used, but the Roosevelts, fortunately, had not been. But as soon as Jason said that, one of those moments when it clicks, you just
kind of silence, and Dwight goes, "That's it.
I like it." And we all agree to just sort of,
That's a good name. You guys have a good font. I know that sounds funny, but when you do this for a long time, you play music, you look at those things immediately.
You see the same thing over and over.
And everybody's heard that name. You know, what's funny is that for after we recorded, you know, of course you sit on your recordings for a while before you ever put them out. And in our case, we did it in reverse. We made the songs first, the studio recordings, and then we found the players that could recreate it. Yeah. And so it took us a long time just to find the players that could help recreate it. But when people would ask what we were doing and what band we were in, we'd say, "Oh, we're in the Roosevelts," and they go, "Oh, I've heard of you," but we hadn't even started playing live yet. So, you know, certain names do have a resonance that people just feel like they've heard.
I thought I had seen you guys and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That's weird. Oh, there was a band called Slow Roosevelt.
Slow Roosevelt?
There have been a couple variations.
From Dallas.
There's a band called Blue Roosevelts?
That's a stupid name.
No, that's
the Roosevelts is a great name.
Oh, the what?
The Roosevelts is just, it's awesome.
It's quick. It's to the point. It's memorable.
Yeah,
it's
great.
Although when people see it, they go, "Oh, the Roosevelts," because of the double O.
And here's the question on that.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Yeah, okay. Well, is it just another pronunciation?
It is. I think it, like, in old times, because if you watch, like, those old things about like both Roosevelts, I like
Roosevelt.
Franklin Roosevelt. You know,
Roosevelt.
And then eventually it just became Roosevelt.
Maybe it's just because I'm from the South and it's always been Roosevelt.
Yeah.
And so I thought people were just being dumb. I was like, man, how did they not know how to pronounce? We had two presidents by this name, but now I'm learning
about my own
name.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That it could potentially be the Roosevelts. Well, I won't be so hard on them anymore.
Yeah.
But it is the Roosevelts. Is the official.
That's the name of your band.
You know, it's like James or Jimmy. You know, it's James.
Yeah.
Just it's the Roosevelts.
James or Jimmy. WeAreTheRoosevelts.com is your website. It's a good website. Who did? I know this is a weird question, but I want to see if I'm right. Did Alexander Valenti do your pictures?
No.
God damn, I thought I could tell lighting.
No, on that website, it was a great friend of ours, Nicole Ryan Photography.
And she's really great. I loved her.
She's
very
phenomenal.
Natural.
Yeah.
You know, which it looks good.
And then we just did some photos recently with a guy that's kind of impressing the hell out of me, Dalton Campbell. He's a new guy, moved into town.
Okay.
He does some great stuff.
But he does some really awesome photos and really has a like a kind of an eye for the music side of photos, yeah. You know.
Well, I'd be totally remiss if I did not send a shout-out thank you to Christina Shipley for setting this up.
Of course.
Absolutely.
You guys are working with her now?
Yeah, yep. She's great.
She's not mean to you?
She's no, pretty mean
we
to
keep,
us, but
we
like
keep her
it.
In check.
She's not mean, but she knows what's going on.
Yeah, she knows what's going on. She does stuff. She's,
yeah.
She's a mover and a shaker
she's
for sure.
She's a mover and a shaker.
Yep.
Yeah, and a nice person.
Yes.
She totally set this up. I mean, this morning we set it up for tonight. So that's
she,
how
yeah,
fast,
she was texting
that's
me
how fast she works.
Yeah, that was pretty quick.
Yeah.
Thanks, Christina.
Yeah, thanks, Christina, as well. Anything else you want to let people know? People can get out there and get your album, Cold Sheets. It's an EP with 6 songs on it, so it's better than one. Those 4-song ones or 3-song ones, you're like...
A little too short.
I'm getting cheated.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, but there is one thing I want to say. We had sidelined on my grandfather being an inventor, but I'll wrap up the story really quick.
So yeah.
The way I picked up guitar was my grandpa created... this device that you strap onto the neck of your guitar to where that you could press a button that's attached to a spring that with rubber pads on the bottom that would push the strings for you. So it's like a total cheat device.
That's a real thing though.
Yeah.
I think I've seen that.
Well, but he made a primitive version of it and then someone else made a more high-tech version of it and actually won the patent. But Grandpa had made this one and so I was playing with it and I pushed the buttons and learned You Are My Sunshine. And I went, oh, shit, I can put my fingers there. And then I took the contraption off, and from there I started spinning 5 hours a day. So to wrap up that side of the story, it was Grandpa's crazy invention that ended up getting me hooked on guitar.
Your grandpa's guitar strap-on invention.
Grandfather's there it is.
Creepy.
Guitar strap-on.
Well, great. People should go see you guys. Is there any other shows other than if they can't afford to go to Miami on a boat or... I'm from Miami. I have to go visit my family. That's the thing where I was like...
Perfect.
I got you.
Perfect. See, then I wouldn't be visiting them. I'd be once again avoiding the face-to-face.
All right, got to get on a boat. Bye.
See guys, you. Pick me up at the airport and drop me off at the boat place.
Or
the
love you.
Yeah.
We've got some coming up in January and February, okay. Kind of routing
so
those right now.
So people can just go to wearetheroosevelts.com. It's a good website. You can hear your whole EP there through the SoundCloud thing and...
Yep.
Find out all about you guys.
We've got the show dates. We actually should be updating those in the next couple days.
Yeah, and a great video, by the way.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was fun. We just filmed it in the backyard. It's nice when you can create something good. And
throw a party,
budget.
Film
it's amazing.
Call it a music
people
video.
People can really do good stuff now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, is it, there's nothing I'm missing?
Oh, God, I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think that's it. You find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheRoosevelts.
Yeah.
WeAretheRoosevelts.com. It has all of our social media links, got videos, all that good stuff. So check us out. As we said earlier, we'll be playing New Year's at the Paramount with Bob Schneider. Got a couple shows in January coming up, which we'll be announcing those pretty soon. But
and if people are listening to this in 2 years, they should check you guys out.
They still should. Absolutely.
What's up, future?
Thank you, James and Jason.
Thanks a lot.
Thank
we appreciate
John.
It.
I like those guys, man. I know that James from somewhere, man. I don't know where, but I do know him from somewhere. Hey, these are great guys. This is a great EP. I've been listening to it for the last couple of days. I put it on my iPod and listened to it on the way down to Houston for Christmas, and I really enjoyed it, and I enjoy their music. Hey, Dwight Baker did a great job. Great to hear JJ Monzi jamming on people's music. Great to hear these guys. Get out there and see them. Look them up. We are the Roosevelts. Thank you to my friend Christina for hooking that up, and thank you to you for listening, and I hope you're still in a holiday mode. I hope you didn't have to go to work like right away, because that seems like it would suck. Anyway, hey guys, I'm thinking about you. I hope that you're gearing up for your New Year's Eve. Woo! If you're in Houston, come on out and see Skyrocket at Rockefeller's. If there are still tickets left for the Bob Schneider at the Paramount, you can go see the Roosevelts there. Okay? I wish you a very happy end of the year. And I hope you're going to do stuff and having fun. And thank you so much for listening. You know, I always appreciate it. Let's hear some more from the Roosevelts. Here they are. Let's get down.
I know is I was made for this. But I don't wanna lose that feeling. I don't wanna let you go. So let's hold on tight to this first kiss. It feels just like we were made for this. You're right here and I don't wanna let you go. These summer nights, the cheap red wine, your body laying next to mine. Let's lose ourselves in everything we know. There's a freedom in the wind. Hold on tight and let's ride the breaths we're breathing in. I wanna let you in. I wanna show you where I've been. So why don't we just let this all begin? Cause baby, you give me that feeling. And I don't wanna let you go. Right here and I don't wanna let you go. The summer nights and the cheap red wine, your body lay.